It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Friends, customers, and fans of Grinnell Heritage Farms received a shock a few weeks ago when farmers Andrew and Melissa Dunham announced that they would not be offering a CSA for 2020. They're scaling back their operation. They're selling off equipment. And why? Their message cites two primary reasons: climate change and a broken local food system. For a little over a decade, Grinnell Heritage Farms has been one of the highest profile, most admired local food operations in the state. And this announcement has left a lot of people shaken, and it raises some important questions. So this hour, we're going to do a local foods reality check. Michelle Kenyon, director of Field to Family, and Liz Colby of Practical Farmers of Iowa will be here in a little while. But we're going to start at Grinnell Heritage Farms with Andy Dunham. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And I was one of those people who saw your message and was shocked because I've talked to you over the years. I've been to your farm over the years. And, you know, from outside, it looked like a thriving operation. So let's break down what happened. And I want to start with the first reason that you cited, climate change. Tell me what you've been experiencing.
So our farm, we started in 2006. My wife, Melissa, joined the operation in 07, and we worked together to grow it. And we had a good run. I mean, I think we're making this decision in a proactive fashion instead of a reactive fashion. So we're choosing to go out on our own terms instead of, you know, being forced to go out. Basically, by looking at forecasts and looking at the numbers and the trend lines that we see. So we're not leaving without some, you know, we feel pretty good about what we were able to accomplish. With climate change, what we've seen in the last few years, we specialized in root crops, especially fall storage root crops. And we have received a very large percentage of our annual precipitation in the fall in the last three calendar years, so 17, 18, and 19. And 2018 being the worst of that, we ended up getting, I don't even remember off the top of my head, but it was like 24 inches of rain in about a three-week period in the fall in 2018. And it makes digging root crops very, very challenging, if not impossible. And so we saw rot in some of our carrots, you know, from being underwater and other root crops. And we saw some crops we just couldn't even get to. You know, the tractor would just sink into the ground. We did tear up some fields pretty badly trying to get things out in the last few years. It wasn't, you know, our business model of specializing in fall roots with that excessive rainfall was quite challenging. And coupled with that, you know, last year we had almost a month delay to the start of spring. You know, pretty much all of the farmers in the state of Iowa, regardless of what you were growing, we were all challenged with that, you know, where we couldn't get into the field in April. It was cold and wet. We set out about 500,000 transplants every year that we start from seed in our greenhouse. And once you get about 4 weeks behind, there just isn't really any catching up. So we had to choose which crops to not plant. I admit that if I had to do it over again, I probably would have, you know, thrown a few more crops out and not planted them at all. And then we ended up having these, we have these really dry summers for the last 3 years too. Where we go from a wet spring to almost no rain whatsoever. We had a stretch, I think, in 2018 where we didn't have any precipitation, I think, for almost 90 days. And so just, you know, the weather's kind of challenging, and we were willing to go into 2020 even with the weather challenges. We were willing to risk that. But we ended up revising our financial projections because of some news that we got from some of our wholesale clients that made us doubt that we could actually grow or could actually sell how much we can grow. So climate change is a challenge. We're going to have to deal with it. But I think the lack of markets is probably that was the nail in the coffin for us.
Well, and let's talk a little bit more about that, because you have had a very successful CSA program over the years, community supported agriculture, where people sign up for a share and they pay you. You provide them with a share every week through the growing season. And that's been a really important part of your business. But tell me more about what you were trying to do with wholesale clients.
So, yeah, I'm happy you brought up the CSA, and we're sorry to all of you Grinnell Heritage Farm CSA shareholders who are listening. This was not an easy decision to make, and I still have a passion for farming, so this was a difficult decision to make. And our CSA numbers, contrary to the bulk of CSA farm numbers across the whole country, our CSA was holding up well. We were actually on track for 2020 to have a slight uptick in the number of CSA shareholders that we had. What has really changed, and I'm going to focus maybe on the Iowa City Cedar Rapids corridor because I have some of those numbers in my head. But this is a statewide phenomenon. In the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area, the retail grocery floor space, like the number of square feet, I believe the number it's gone up by about 70% over the last 5 years. But the population has only grown, I don't even know if it's a 10% increase. And so there's tremendous grocery competition in the Cedar Valley corridor. And when you're doing that, like, so we sell a lot to New Pioneer Food Co-op and have traditionally, and we still sell to them, and they do a very good job of being mission-driven, trying to buy local food. But they've seen a fairly steep decline in the number of people coming into stores with that increased grocery competition. And I don't know that people realize that a lot of these chains that are coming in they're not mission driven and they aren't buying anything locally. So, you know, we saw our sales dip there. In the western part of the state, you know, we've seen our sales dip there to institutions. So we're talking mostly grocery accounts. Some are moved through food hubs, but the food hub model seems to be struggling. And I know Michelle's going to talk about that later. The way we built our business was that we would focus in on crops that we were good at growing, that we knew that we could grow profitably most of the time, and we would sell those wholesale, and those would help to support our CSA offerings. So carrots, for example, we would grow enough carrots to sell wholesale and deal with them mostly mechanically, and that made the carrots that we put into our CSA shares cost us less money to grow, which made the CSA more profitable. So if you took away the wholesale and we just ran the numbers for CSA, we would have to have laid off probably about half of our staff. But because the way CSAs are, or at least our CSA is structured, it is much more labor intensive to put together a CSA box or a CSA offering, even if you're doing it in a buffet style where you're not packing boxes, that if we laid off half of our staff, we actually wouldn't have enough labor to adequately serve the CSA. So it's kind of a complete package. The way our structure, the way we structured ourselves required us to sell some wholesale.
And with the increased competition in grocery, there's also been a shift in how grocery products are marketed at these other stores, not like the co-ops, but these other stores that have come in. There's so much organic produce on the shelves. Do you think that for a lot of consumers makes them feel like buying local is not that important as long as they can get an organic product?
I would say that is important to some people, but when we actually talk with folks, I think a lot of people greatly overestimate how much local food they're actually buying. And so, like, for example, if you bought a CSA share from us, some of those folks are spending, you know, if they get the whole season's share, they might be spending, you know, $1,000 a year with us, which is a fair bit of produce. And then you might go to a restaurant and they'll advertise they're really advertising that they're buying locally. And if they were to actually look at their books, there are some of these restaurants that are advertising as being like, you know, farm to table restaurants that aren't even hitting $1,000 in purchases in a full calendar year. So there are, you know, it's across the board. I think a lot of people are overestimating how much they're actually buying.
About 10 years ago, we were having a lot of conversations about local foods and the need to build infrastructure that would support a local food system in Iowa. And again, we'll be talking more about that in a moment. But from your perspective, have we been making progress on that?
It's in fits and starts, and there are a lot of people doing good work out there and trying, but we don't. So there isn't the institutional demand. So if you go into a hospital or a school or a nursing home or to the grocery stores. There are some that are buying, and are they buying as much as they could be? There might be a few that are, but the vast majority of them are not. Like you go into a lot of these institutions and they're serving fresh asparagus on their menu right now, which isn't most assuredly not local in coming out of South America. And so, they're not even doing seasonal menu planning yet. And so the food hubs are trying, but they're running up against the wall of institutional buyers not buying that much or not at all. There's a delivery cost. So if you're an institution and you're only buying $100 worth of product from a food hub, you need to recognize that that delivery probably costs the food hub anywhere between $30 to $50 by the time they, do all of the back end work and the delivery. And then the food hubs are also struggling, and the institutions are struggling because there are very, very few farms raising the quantities that would be necessary to be able to supply at scale to the institutions or the food hub. So it's kind of the chicken and the egg and the egg. We don't really, all three, the growers, the food hubs, and the institutions, were all insufficiently serving each other's needs.
You also feel like consumers like the idea of local food, but aren't committed to it. When we spoke earlier, you said that you feel like a lot of people treat local food like a special occasion kind of food. And just in 30 yes. seconds, what did you mean by that?
So I'm stealing my friend Jill from Bluegate Farm. She's the one who put this really well, but it is a special occasion purchase. So people will buy Brussels sprouts from us, at Thanksgiving, but maybe not any other time of the year. And if we're going to make this actually work, it needs to be an everyday purchase.
All right, Andy, stay with us. We are going to continue this conversation in a moment. We'll also be bringing Michelle Kenyon of Field to Family and Liz Colby of Practical Farmers of Iowa into the conversation. With me now, Andy Dunham. He and his wife, Melissa, run Grinnell Heritage Farm, and they have decided to scale back their operation. They will not be offering a CSA for 2020. They're selling off the farm equipment, and he has called the local food system broken. We'll talk more in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're doing a local foods reality check. 10 years ago, there was a lot of enthusiasm for local foods. Many farms starting up, people excited about CSAs and farmers markets, a lot of conversation about the need to build infrastructure to create a sustainable distribution network for local foods, talk of the need for policy changes to make small-scale farming more feasible, a lot of nonprofits starting up to support the movement. So 10 years later, where are we? Andrew Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farms is here with me. He and his wife, Melissa, have had to make the painful decision to scale back their operation, citing climate change and a broken local food system. And we're also going to bring a few other people into the conversation now. And we want to hear from you. If you're a producer, a consumer, or part of that supply chain, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Michelle Kenyon is here, Director of Field to Family. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Charity.
And Liz Colby is with us as well, Horticulture and Habitat Program Manager for Practical Farmers of Iowa. Hello, Liz.
Hello.
Thank you all so much for being here today. And Michelle, let's go to you to talk a little bit about Field to Family and your role in this whole local food system. What does Field to Family do?
Field to Family is an organization that works to create a more healthy, sustainable, and local food system in our region. We support farm-to-school programs in the Iowa City, Cedar Rapids area. We host a free farm stand for low-income, and we promote local food in farms. And just last year, we launched our own wholesale food hub here in our region.
All right. And for people who aren't really familiar with this, and maybe just describe your food hub, because there are many different ways of having a food hub. But these food hubs, the idea is to make it more possible for farmers like Andy to sell their products. It makes it more possible for restaurants and stores to buy large quantities of products instead of having a relationship with an individual farmer. But describe your hub, Michelle.
Yes. So when you know one food hub, you know one food hub. We primarily focus on institutional partners. Partners generally in the Iowa City, Cedar Rapids region, the CSA model is pretty popular. And we found a need from schools, universities, nursing homes, and hospitals to meet their local food needs at a more institutional level. So when we work with farmers, we were looking for cases a week during the season rather than just, you know, one every month.
And as Andy was talking about earlier, that, you know, you may have a restaurant that markets itself as a farm-to-table restaurant, but they may not be buying that much. I mean, the idea is to streamline this operation so an institution can have the food that they need and still support these local farmers, right?
Absolutely. It's about access. Market power for local foods is really low in the state of Iowa, even though we are able to grow a lot of local foods. So having a food hub helps propel and increase that market power. We're able to streamline ordering and the ordering process, and we're able to work with multiple farmers to meet the demand. Ultimately, though, we need to grow that demand. When we did some market research in the planning to launch this food hub, we found that a lot of people, restaurant owners, grocery stores, and such, have really broad definitions of what is considered local. And so we have a lot of education to do. If it's not grown here, it's not local. If it's made here, it's not necessarily local. So we need to fortify those connections with our local farmers and local sourcing.
Do you feel like consumers are willing to prioritize local? I mean, what kind of information do you have about that? Because it may be less convenient and it may be more expensive.
Yes, actually, the research that we've done with the UI Tippey School of Marketing has shown that organic is not as popular as local these days. People want it local. However, they do struggle to access it. It needs to be meet a clear set of criteria to find for consumers to be able to actually access the local item. And they shop primarily at grocery stores, and that's not being grocery stores are not able to meet that demand. They're not able to source the local that consumers want. And they're definite. Every grocery store has a different definition of local as well. And so when it comes down to it, consumers would like to choose more local, but again, local foods does not have the market power that it needs to have.
Well, and Andy, I'm going to go back to you briefly before we bring Liz into the conversation. Let's talk a little bit about consumer knowledge, because even though consumers say that they want to buy local foods, they support local foods, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing the kind of research they need to do to know whether something is local. I mean, there's a knowledge base that consumers need that do you feel is lacking?
Ah, this is a loaded question, Charity. I would say that the knowledge is lacking. Most people in the Midwest don't really know how their food is produced. Even though we're an agricultural state, I think if you look at what people are buying in the grocery stores, we're not growing or importing enough fresh fruits and vegetables in the entire United States to meet our basic USDA dietary guidelines. And we know through the data that food waste, like in fresh produce, is about a third or more. And so we don't even have access as a country to the amount of food that we should be eating as fresh fruits and vegetables. And we're throwing away at least a third of it. And so, I would say the knowledge base is most assuredly not there. And you see that at farmers markets, like some farmers markets allow brokered produce in, and so you'll see like Texas watermelons for sale on the first market in May, and people will be walking around thinking they got this great, wonderful, locally grown watermelon because there's no signage requirements. And that's just not the case. Like if you know your food system, you would know that did not come from Iowa.
Let's bring Liz into the conversation here. Liz Colby, Horticulture and Habitat Program Manager for Practical Farmers of Iowa. Hello, Liz.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you're jumping in the middle of this conversation.
I'm so excited.
Right. Give me the perspective from where you stand about how local foods is working in Iowa.
So my perspective comes both from, you know, my existence as a consumer in the state and also from working with, you know, dozens of fruit and vegetable producers around the state, and also sitting next door to our livestock manager who works with, you know, many, many beef and pork and poultry producers around the state. And there is a huge diversity in how those farmers are doing and perceiving their customer base. But I would say, especially with the departure of Grinnell Heritage Farm, you know, that was really a gut punch to the confidence of local farmers and to their customers. And, you know, those customers are asking their farmers, are you going to make it? And, you know, everything, all the issues Andy has had, those are not an isolated occurrence. And a lot of farmers, I think, are thinking, if Andy and Melissa, if they can't make it work, you know, who can I? And, you know, farmers are also telling me, you know, no one in farming is doing great right now, crop farmers included. But that, you know, a lot of them are still doing just fine. They're keeping their CSA members. But there are other farmers who want to grow more vegetables to become volume producers and sell to wholesale accounts like Andy and Melissa were doing, and are very nervous that the market isn't there and won't be there. And if it you know, happens to be there for a while, that it may go away again and put them in a precarious spot. So some trepidation, but still enthusiasm about local production, but, you know, still some concern.
There have been conversations over the years about policy in Iowa because, of course, a lot and around the country, a lot of the almost all of the food policy, the farming policy, has been written for conventional farming operations. Do you feel like we have the kind of policy support in the state for these smaller scale farmers?
Well, I would say there's not a single solution to this. There are so many farmers, local fruit and vegetable farmers have really created their markets because they don't enjoy the support that's provided to the rest of agriculture in the state of Iowa and around the country. And so I think, you know, policy trying to navigate such a complex set of business practices that are in place now will be difficult. But I will say that, you know, they're struggling from the same issues that many people in rural communities are struggling with, you know, accessing health care and paying for health care. If you're a beginning farmer, you don't make a lot of money, and there's a lot of risk to starting your own business, which is what they're doing. So that's a real struggle for them. You know, the Young Farmers, Iowa Young Farmers Coalition, does have a few bills moving through the House right now. And one of them is on pesticide drift, which is a huge challenge for farmers. Another is on getting a full-time statewide farm-to-school coordinator to break through on some of those institutional barriers. But they're not, by and large, looking to overhaul policy solutions. They're looking for, you know, markets to work with them and for unique ways that they can do better. But, you know, many, I think they would like to see their fellow farmers get the risk management support and insurance they need, but they don't necessarily think that they want to build their business plan to rely on that, if that makes sense.
Well, and Andy was talking about his CSA was holding steady and doing well, but referred to the fact that may not be an overall trend. Liz, can you give us an idea again statewide about how CSAs are doing?
So it really, again, depends farmer to farmer. I guess I don't have a clear statewide picture. It really varies farmer to farmer in what they enjoy doing also. So if they think, you know, I don't know that I ever enjoyed the CSA model that much, and I'm also losing customers, I think I'm going to give it up. But some people that really feel strongly about it and have built an excellent community for themselves are doing well. Others are modifying to capture more of the convenience consumers that may want more flexibility in what they can put in their CSA box. So I would say the model is transforming. The CSA model is transforming as much as anything, and that farmers are trying to be creative in how that best suits their personal needs and the needs of their business.
Michelle, you're in Iowa City. You're in this little Iowa City, Cedar Rapids corridor area where there are a lot of CSAs, so many in this little part of the state. What do you see here, and what do you hear about other parts of the state?
So for this region, we've put together a CSA guide for the past 5 years at least, if not longer. And about 4 years ago, we actually did increase the list pretty heavily. There were a lot of new CSAs. They all had their own markets, their own distribution points, and their own locations within the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area. But just this last year, we put together, last month actually, we put together a new CSA listing, and sadly, we knocked three off the list. They're no longer either they're no longer farming or they're no longer choosing the CSA model. I have heard from CSA farmers who've been around a long time that their numbers are declining, and they've had to diversify where they're sell in their markets. But there's also the ones that are doing well are adding distribution points. They're adding more, and they're making it more accessible for people to be able to join their CSA.
Well, and of course, this is in the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area, which is kind of a hotbed for the local foods movement. Andy, you're in Grinnell, which is, you know, more toward the middle of the state. What do you hear from farmers who are not in this sort of Shangri-La area of Iowa?
I would echo what both Michelle and Liz said, and it kind of depends farm to farm. I've been looking at national trends because, you know, we've been trying to work hard to keep our customer base and modify our CSA as needed, or, you know, make the changes that we need to stay relevant. And the national trends really are quite, they're distressing if you're looking at CSA as a model. And I think a lot of folks jumped in, like Michelle said, there was a great influx of CSA farmers. And I think they jumped in thinking that, you know, the guaranteed market is a great thing, and maybe didn't understand how much. Having mentored some people over the years too, I think there's a lack of understanding as to how much work it actually is. And so I think there were some people that maybe got in a little underprepared. And I do think that the convenience factor that Liz touched upon is something that is really playing into things, you know, going into the grocery store and buying a kit of pre-chopped vegetables that you can stir fry in 10 minutes has definitely put a ding in CSA offerings. And I feel like people are eating at restaurants more too. I think that trend line is going up quite drastically too. And so if you're eating out more, you're going to cook less at home.
Do you feel like the deck is stacked against small-scale farmers like you, Andy, as far as policy goes?
That's another loaded question. I would say yes, but I think that the deck is stacked against fruit and vegetable production pretty much across the board because of the way our farm bill is crafted, and it's kind of a balancing act between commodity producing states and states that maybe are a little more urban. And so we're balancing SNAP benefits with support for commodity agriculture. And so California, which has hands down the largest dollar amount of agricultural production of any state, actually receives very little proportionately, you know, in support for farmers. And so even like the big produce farmers out in California aren't really receiving direct support or even subsidized insurance like the commodity growers might here in the Midwest. Where I feel like the deck is stacked against us, not just policy-wise, but it's kind of industry-wide. So if you have the great big distributors like Sysco and Sodexo, they don't really have incentive to buy from farms like ours because we're so small compared to the large California or Mexico. A lot of the produce is coming out of Mexico. There's just not the incentive there. So it's policy and institutional. I would say it's stacked against produce across the board.
Michelle, you look like you have something you want to add there.
Yeah, well, I wanted just to mention about the convenience factor. We're finding that with consumers, but we're also finding that with institutions who want to choose local. They're used to buying pre-chopped fruits and vegetables. And so what we've had to do, and we're happy to do, is work with those institutions, those schools and those universities to create their own system within their system so that they can buy local, whole, healthy foods from local farmers and process them in-house. Changes like that are going to be necessary in order for us to adopt more local foods in it. Market-wide.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the local food system in Iowa today. With me, Michelle Kenyon, Director of Field to Family, Liz Colby, Horticulture and Habitat Program Manager for Practical Farmers of Iowa, and Andrew Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farm. And we'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're doing a local foods reality check. We're talking about the local food system and some of the very real challenges facing farmers, distributors, consumers, why this system is not working in the state of Iowa right now. And we'd love to hear your thoughts wherever you fall in that chain, whether you're a producer, a distributor, or a consumer. You can share your thoughts at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Andy Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farm, Michelle Kenyon, Director of Field to Family, and Liz Colby, Horticulture and Habitat Program Manager for Practical Farmers of Iowa. And I want to get to the phones. Brian is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, it's Ryan.
Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Oh, you're fine. I'm Ryan Marquardt with the Iowa Food Cooperative in Des Moines. So we are an online food hub, and unlike some food hubs, we are a direct-to-customer. So every 2 weeks, people go online, they order the items they want, and then we work with those farms to try to get them here and aggregate them and then distribute them out to our members. So we usually have anywhere between 80 to 100 active producers, and then membership is usually around 300 to 400 people.
All right, so this sounds like an older kind of co-op model, although with the high-tech spin.
Co-op model, yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't say we're certainly not immune to some of these trends you see. We have seen, you know, increasing competition in our space. We also see other things changing, though, like farmers markets in our area tend to be less about local food and more about an entertainment venue or a thing to do. And so we do see a lot of those producers who are struggling and then coming to us as a way to try to kind of, you know, direct their core consumer members to us, especially since we run year round. So like you can come to us in the off season, but yeah, we're not immune to a lot of the stresses that are within the system. You know, transportation, logistics across the state, getting product from one end of the state to the other is a significant and difficult problem that we face. Competition in this space and the rise of convenience over local is certainly something we see. I mean, we've got an Amazon distribution center being built in Des Moines, you know, in the Des Moines metro area. We don't know exactly what that's going to mean in the food space, or if they're going to try to enter into that direct to customer. We see, you know, Hy-Vee's doing the aisle online. So it's just making things easier and easier, you know, and we're busier and busier. And we do see that we're kind of fighting against a trend that is challenging, but we still think that local food is important and that people want to have access to products that are made in Iowa and they want to see that money stay in Iowa. And so we're still in here swinging for the fences, trying to make this thing work.
So Ryan, what do you think needs to change to make this system work better?
Well, I think there's a couple components. Like, I mean, clearly educational component is a big part. A lot of people don't really understand the seasonality of Iowa products. We don't have the ability to freeze product in the state anymore with the closure of Iowa Choice Harvest. We're now working with Snowpack up in Minnesota to bring flash frozen vegetables from the Midwest area because we don't have anything like that here. So yeah, the Iowa Food Cooperative is trying to, you know, remain relevant in a space that's constantly changing. But yeah, so any support we can get from the state, too, in logistics or transportation issues. I know Farm to Table, the service in Western Iowa, they struggle with their balance sheet as well. And, you know, a lot of our food hubs kind of struggle to make it work in this state. But they're critical parts of the local food system in terms of moving product from one end to the other, or being that the node where another place picks up products. I mean, we have about 8 different farms or different people or entities that come through here and drop product or pick up product from some of our small farms, in addition to what we're doing directly to our customers. So anything in the distribution assistance, or anything in in working on education, those things are all, or working to get flash freezing facilities in the state, those things, you know, are all critical things that I think wouldn't hurt our market.
Ryan, you wouldn't be doing this if you weren't optimistic about the future, but how are you feeling?
I'm hanging in there. I'm trying to be optimistic about everything. It's a difficult time. You know, we are, I think it's important that we have, for instance, like our online presence, and, you know, people are coming to Des Moines, but we're also distributing product out to 8 different satellite sites. So I think it's important that we at the Iowa Food Cooperative, you know, hang in there, remain relevant, and try to stay in front of people. But yeah, I have consequential concerns about the future of local foods in Iowa. I think it's, you know, there's some difficult roads are, you know, difficult times might be ahead, and we need to, you know, weather the storm and try to find a way through it.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for calling and sharing your perspective. You can also give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this from Mike Carberry with the Iowa Farmers Union. He says, Iowa doesn't feed the world. We don't even feed our own community. It's not just the local food system that's broken. It's the whole darn system. And we're not going to fix the whole system today, Michelle, but can you respond to Mike's comment?
We are looking at a global food system here in Iowa, where Iowa imports over 80% of our food. We know that our food travels about 1,500 miles to get to our plate. We also know that Iowa has fertile soil, so we know we can grow a lot of food here. But as Andy stated earlier, the food's not necessarily getting to the people who most need it, and we're wasting a lot of it. So ultimately, we are looking at a food system that can use a lot more support through through policy. We know that the current system was created by not just national and state regulations, but also international trade policies. We're importing more from more countries than we ever have before. Ultimately, we're looking as a way to rebuild our food system into one that's more community-based, so that we can see the economics and the environmental impacts and those benefits right here in our own neighborhood.
I want to talk a little bit about farmers markets. Of course, a lot of people love to go to farmers markets. We have thriving farmers markets in many parts of the state of Iowa. But Andy, earlier you were talking about the fact that, you know, when somebody goes to a farmers market, they're not necessarily buying local. We feel really good about shopping at the farmers market. But tell me what you think consumers need to know when they go to the farmers market.
Oh, you keep throwing loaded questions at me, Charity. Thank you.
You have strong opinions. I understand that.
Yeah. I have to recognize that I'm on the radio, so I have to be careful how I say stuff, I guess. So we participated in farmers markets for years and years. Melissa would go to one, I'd go to another, and we'd have a staff person go to a third on a Saturday. And so I feel pretty steeped in it. And what we ended up doing is we kept track of our numbers over the years. And you could have fantastic market days in certain locations where you might come out quite well. But then you could also have terrible market days because, you know, the weather might be nice and you'd look at your historical sales and you would say, you know, likely we can sell, you know, X number of dollars of produce, and you'd show up and there wouldn't be anybody there. And you might have had to have unloaded all of your product onto the concrete and it got hot. And so you would donate it to, like, so in the Des Moines area, oftentimes we would take our food that wouldn't keep to Hope Ministries. And in the state of Iowa, there's a tax credit for donating food, but it maxes out at $2,400. And there were numerous times in the later years where we met the maximum allowable tax, like we hit that tax credit in a single day. And so you could wipe out 5 or 6 or even 10 good market days by 1 or 2 bad ones. And they've gone more to like a fair-like atmosphere and a carnival-like atmosphere, or even a flea market-like atmosphere,
where you have a lot of people selling goods that aren't foods, so not meat or honey or, you know, fruits and vegetables, or even prepared food, or it's gone more to prepared food too, I guess. So you'd see people walking around eating a mango on a stick, which, you know, the stick didn't come from Iowa and the mango didn't come from Iowa, and they're drinking a cup of coffee from the coffee shop, and they're walking their dog and not carrying anything from any Iowa farm. And so I would say that some of these places I would challenge, like, I wish they would just call it a fair. And then maybe I wouldn't feel so aggrieved, I guess. But farmers markets, I would say most produce growers in Iowa would be better off just getting a job, economically at least. They might be getting their social time and they enjoy gardening and things like that. But it's not an economic engine for many farms.
Liz, you want to weigh in on farmers markets in Iowa and where they fall in our economic system?
Sure, absolutely. Similar to CSA, there are mixed feelings about farmers market. What I guess I would like to say is that the direct market producers who are selling at farmers market, who are doing CSA, who are, you know, independently trying to sell directly to consumers, are capturing those values-driven consumers who have the time, energy, and will to find those producers and to make that connection happen. The large percentage of eaters in Iowa who would like to support local food and buy local food, you know, they are convenience driven, not necessarily because they don't care, but because they might have kids or two jobs, and they're buying food at grocery stores. I think that, you know, we really need to look at the population that we're not reaching right now through local foods and how we can grow that. Not how can we have more farmers markets or how can we have more CSAs, because farmers are able to build that infrastructure on their own pretty well. Where they're struggling is to capture these larger markets with the bulk of our food purchasing. It's the same with beef producers. They can, you know, reach a number of customers one-on-one, but not enough volume to make a living for their family. And, you know, they can't get through to a larger market.
Let's get back to the phones. Kirby is on the line, driving through Iowa. Hi, Kirby.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's your perspective?
So I'm not from Iowa, so I apologize. I'm just driving through. But I grew up in agriculture my whole life, and I love this topic of small diversified farms and direct-to-consumer local foods, no matter where it is in the country. I've been in agriculture my whole life, like I said, but I don't currently grow, you know, have a farm or anything like that. But I talk to farmers a lot. I talk to consumers a lot that are looking at this local market for food. And the thing that I find a lot of times is that producers get into the business of farming before they really know who their consumers are in their area. And so, you know, I know some people who do really well with the CSA model. I know some people who do really well with farmers markets. I know some people who do really well with people coming to their farm to pick the food directly. I know people who like to have their food just delivered to their house or have some kind of co-op where they can just go shop for food all at one place like they do at the grocery store. And so, you know, one of the challenges I think that farmers have is that the consumer in this sphere, in this space, is not all the same. There's some consumers who are willing to pay three times the money for the same fruit or vegetable because it was grown locally or grown in a certain way that they agree with. And there's some people who aren't. There's some people who are willing to, you know, drive to your farm and want to have a relationship with the farmer. And there's some people who don't care about who their farmer is as long as they agree with the values that the farmer's producing their food on. And on one more note, I would say that, you know, I know a lot of farmers that struggle. They're trying to do this. And sometimes it seems like they're fighting against each other instead of working with each other. They show up and they're
Kirby,
both
we're almost out of time, so I'm gonna let people respond to that. I mean, obviously there are all different kinds of consumers. I think Andy, from your perspective, there are not nearly enough consumers who actually care about where their food is grown and actually know about where their food is grown. I mean, convenience is something that really all consumers care about, right?
Yeah, I would say that most people don't care.
From your experience. All right. That speaks volumes. Let's Thomas is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Thomas.
Hi there.
Briefly, tell us your perspective.
Yeah, so I worked for Andy and Melissa from 2007 to 2009, and I just wanted to say that the impact, you know, not just that I can't get, you know, organic carrots from the farm, I have to get organic carrots from somewhere else now. You know, when I worked on that on Grinnell Heritage Farm, it was a really transformative experience for me. I learned so much about water quality and the environment in Iowa and the flaws of the landscape and how it's been built out and industrialized. And so when we lose farms like this, we're not just losing the carrots that we love or the tomatoes or fresh basil or whatever. We're also losing a generation of people that can be sort of educated and informed about the environment. And so for me, it's a drag that things are struggling, but that's where my real fear lies, is in the kind of educational element and that impact on the landscape.
All right. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for calling and sharing your perspective. And we only have about 2 minutes left here. And Andy, I know that you do have plans for the future with your nonprofit, the Grinnell Heritage Center. Do you want to tell us very briefly what you're hoping to do?
So the idea is my wife Melissa's idea, and we've been working on it for about 3 years. So the scaling back is somewhat unfortunate timing. But we're going to put together what is more or less a rural community space where we can have classes and after-school care and summer camps and address some of those very things Thomas just talked about. And, you know, we really do want to continue to be educators. And so hopefully we have a chance to help turn this around. I'm not entirely without hope. I just think that currently I would rather not be selling into this market.
Andy Dunham, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Andy Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farm. They are scaling back their operation and ending their CSA. And 30 seconds each. Michelle, you know, what to make local foods work, what do you think our highest priority is right now?
Well, it's been touched on a bit, but our consumers need to connect more with where our food comes from. The education needs to be there. Our organization struggles to meet all the demand for this education throughout our state and throughout our region. But ultimately, starting young, learning where your food comes from, who your farmers are, what's in season, when, and asking for that, demanding that, where you eat.
Michelle Kenyon, Director of Field to Family, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Liz Colby, you get the final word. What do you think our highest priority is looking to the future?
I think if we want to have thriving rural communities and more value coming from our agricultural lands and more people earning their income from farming, a part of that solution has to be bringing fruit and vegetable crops and integrated livestock back to farms. And we are interested in working on many ways to do that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Liz Colby, Horticulture and Habitat Program Manager for Practical Farmers of Iowa. We've been talking about local foods in Iowa this hour. Talk of Iowa's production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, and Dennis Reese. You never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Please subscribe to our podcast. Search for Talk of Iowa wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.